welcome to the Tapping World Summit 2010. This is your host, Jessica Ortner. By listening to this interview, you agree to the terms located at thetappingworldsummit.com/disclaimer. I hope this interview helps you become a healthier and a happier you. Enjoy. We are all born with an innate immunity, a type of general protection to certain germs and viruses, but we also have what's called an adaptive immunity, which refers to how our immune system develops throughout our life. In this world, with all our flus and colds, it's important to do what we can to help develop our immune system the best we can. So in this audio, you are going to learn how you can strengthen your immune system with tapping. We will be speaking to Dr. Alexander R. Leese. Dr. Leese has 20 years of experience as a psychotherapist and registered clinical counselor, and he is a tapping expert with 12 years of experience. He is also the author of Pathways Through Your Mind Field. Alex, thank you very much for being with us.
Oh, nice to be with you again.
So, Alex, let's jump right into this. The immune system. Now, you say that there are two different immune systems. What do you mean by this?
Okay, you use the word innate, and that's true. We are born with, in effect, two immune systems. One you described. It's internal. That is, it looks for bugs and bacteria and essentially, it looks for non-self, and then it eliminates it, or tries to. The other immune system is commonly known as the fight or flight syndrome. You familiar with that term?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
Well, why don't you talk a little bit about that, just in case someone doesn't?
No problem. When we're in a situation where we feel threatened, or even we perceive it. For instance, a noise in the middle of the night you're not used to and you're alone. So you're perceiving there could be danger to that. It's an unfamiliar sound. What happens is a dramatic shift takes place within the system. The energy that was running your internal immune system now switches the ANS, the autonomous nervous system, over to a sympathetic nervous system response. That means the blood that you're using for digestion is shipped to the muscles, the big muscles like quadriceps and biceps and so on, and any energy that was used to feed or run the internal immune system, excuse me, is now running that external one. It's heightening your senses. It's releasing endorphins or painkillers, natural painkillers, into the system. So now the immune system within is down because the energy and the blood flow has been shifted to the external one. So when I do a seminar on the mind-body, we go into the immune system, and the one I like best to make it easy for people to comprehend is think of a seesaw. When one is up, the other side's down. So when we're in a external threat mode, the internal immune system is down and we're susceptible to bugs, if you like, but the external system is up. When we deal with the perceived threat, it switches back. So one side goes down, the other side goes up.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to have one on and the other off. There's no, let's have them both on at the same time and protect ourselves completely.
Okay. And Alex, when most people think about the fight or flight, you know, I think they have the image of, man in the wild and you know, that very instinctive reaction that we have. How does the flight or flight response appear in our lives now, in our everyday life?
Okay, well, you're right. So let's back it up just a bit in time. And a gene, which is really a set of instructions for a set of behaviors, was developed for survival because we lived in at one time in an environment where there were saber-toothed tigers and woolly mammoths and dinosaurs. And we were considered a snack or a fast food, depending how fast we could run. So we developed this gene which drove the fight or flight system. So we either threw a sharp stick at the saber-toothed tiger, because that's all we had, or we ran like hell. That's why the blood is reshunted to the quadriceps. So in that moment, we're in stay alive mode. We're not interested in short-term memory. We're not interested in appointments, phone numbers, where the car keys are, whatever. We're interested in staying alive. Once the threat is dealt with, all that turns off and we return to a normal state. Today, we don't have any saber-toothed tigers, but that gene is still there. So it attaches it to noises in the night, that stranger in a dark alley, success, whatever. It'll attach the same response because it has to operate, so it finds something to hook it up to. Here we have the basis of panic attacks, anxiety, and so on.
It's interesting, Alex, what you were just listing. You know, you were saying loud noises, someone in the alley, and then you said success, which just seems, for someone who's new to this information, that seems, you know, like a big shift. Like, how can you be that panicked and have that response from the fear of success, that same response that you would have with someone that scares you in an alleyway?
Mm-hmm. The whole idea is perception and programming. If, for example, we'll start with something simple. A little boy is, let's say, eating green peas, and daddy comes along and gives him a whack on the head. Eat all your green peas, he says. And he does that a few times. It's perfectly possible that that same gene will now attach a negative to the experience of eating green peas, like a Pavlovian effect. So the next thing we know is poor boy has a food sensitivity or an allergy. Now, let's suppose you were reading the poem in grade 7 and everybody aloud, and everybody laughed because you were nervous or whatever happened. You could think of 1,000 examples where you threw the football and you missed and everybody wanted to kick you off the team. In some way, without getting too deep into it, I'm sure people's imagination can fill in the blanks. In some way, success can be hooked up to a negative feeling. So now the idea of being successful can, for some, can go all the way up to driving a panic attack.
Mm. And then affect your immune system.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Here's an example. I wrote it in my book, so I've forgotten the source. But what they did, they ran an ad in the in the local newspaper and had a group of volunteers come to the university, and they were told they were going to have a blood test, and their immune system would be recorded. What the count was. The pictures they saw were horrid things. Children mutilated, car accident scenes, blood everywhere. The people that saw these pictures didn't know that most of it was makeup. But nonetheless, they just flashed these pictures after they took a blood test. The average on the blood test was 12,500. That doesn't mean much if you don't know much about the immune system, but just hold that number in your head. After they watched the horrid pictures, another blood test was taken. This is about half an hour. Their immune system was reading 600. It's gone from 12,500 to 600. That's a way of thinking about that is 12,500 soldiers are now down to 600. Mm-hmm. So you're susceptible to every bug in the room. Later, they showed him pleasant pictures and it came back up.
Wow. Okay. So, Alex, I'm listening to this and, you know, I'm hearing you talk about how these fears and those images affected, you know, the amount of soldiers that we have our immune system. And it makes me think a lot about swine flu, because everyone talks about swine flu and there's a lot of fear around it, a lot of things in the media about it. So do you find that because that there's this fear around something, that fear puts our body in that kind of responsive mode that actually does the opposite effect, which actually harms us instead of guards us against it?
Study after study shows the more we worry about something like the swine flu, the more susceptible we are. The immune system is compromised. Without getting into all the chemical reactions and all that, the immune system is compromised just by the way we think about it, i.e., if we're stressed about the virus, we have a greater chance of getting it. Those that are up and happy and optimistic do not get it as often. For example, if I may, Barrett and I, my wife and I, have been married 32 years. Between us, we've had two flus and four colds in 32 years. And one has to realize we have five, in those days, seven people a day walking in and doing counseling or psychotherapy. And many of them would have a cold or a flu. We just didn't get it.
Wow. Now, you know, I'm hearing this, and obviously we can consciously start to realize that if we're, say, scared of the swine flu or scared of things in our life, that can affect our immune system. Now, we're consciously aware of that, but then how do we actually apply that? I mean, how do we take this knowledge and really not feel fear over these things that are appearing in our lives? Because that fear just seems like a kind of a very automated response that we have.
Sure, it is. For many, it's a negative or a panic or whatever. For others, it isn't. However, for those that it is a problem and they're concerned that their worry over getting the swine flu, to use that as an example, is increasing the problem, just thinking that way increases it even more.
Okay.
Of all the tools I've used over the last 22 years, like each year I'll go find something new and go attend a seminar, and some of the tools I bring home and integrate into my practice, and others are just hype and I throw them away. About 12 odd years ago, I ran into the tabbing business, and skeptical as heck, I took the training, and then I had a friend who had access to an electrophysiology lab. That's the place where you have, $500,000 or so dollars worth of equipment, and you can actually look at blood samples, oxygen to carbon dioxide ratio, the quality of saliva, breathing rate, heart rate, blood pressure, all the stuff you need. And we tested the tapping. And some of that information was sent to Dr. Cho. That's C-H-O. First initial Z for zebra. Dr. Cho is attached to UCLA. Most people probably wouldn't remember his name until you mention the following. He happens to be the inventor of the iMRI. He invented it. So some of this information was sent to him about tapping, as they call it in the world of academics, percussing specific acupuncture points. His report after he tested it was the following. This is pretty close to the quote. The percussing of specific acupuncture points while focused on an unwanted emotive response shows measurable and demonstrable changes in the brain's physiology and, what was the other word, functionality. So here we have empirical evidence that the tapping does something to the brain, and we've gone on from there. We've had people with autoimmune diseases, Parkinson's, et cetera, where we've introduced tapping and filmed it and shown the difference. So the tapping works. So to answer your question, people, when they're using it, should start to think, just for that time that they're playing around with it, in the following way. There is content. That is, there's a story about something. Let's pick an example. I'm telling you a story about my fear of flying and all the things I go through and all the trouble it created and how the stewardesses responded and so on. So that's the content. That's the story. But also, and this is where I ask people to think a little differently, there's also something running that story. And that's the emotion. So, as you learn to think like that, you listen to the story, you notice that the emotion is getting to its peak, and you then tap that emotion. If you do it successfully, or when it's done successfully, the story collapses. There's nothing to run it. So you've removed an unwanted emotional response by letting the person start to tell you about their fear of flying only until they're into the emotion. So the whole idea, and I say it's contextual, just while you're about to apply the tapping business, you want to think, okay, there's a story here, there's content, and there's an emotion driving it. What is that emotion? When I say, what is the emotion, the brain is very specific. So the individual you're working with, and it could be yourself, needs to supply the wording. I worked with one fellow about sexual abuse. Stepfather for 2 years sexually abused him. He's being very polite, and he said, I'm really angry. But he looked flat. So I finally said, look, dude, if we're sitting in a bar on a Friday night drinking beer after work, and somebody said to you, so how do you feel about the fact your stepfather sexually abused you? And he jumped out of the chair and screamed, I'm in a effing, and he spells it out clearly, rage. That's his word pattern. When we use that word pattern, effing rage, then we saw results. But he'd been tapping for quite a while with no results at all on this anger with my stepfather for sexually abusing me. So the brain is very specific. It knows what you mean by your words. So when you attach a word to the emotion, be it a physical sensation, butterflies in my stomach, or this nervousness, or this anxiety, or this panic, your brain knows what you mean by that. That's when you tap and you repeat those words. So the brain knows what it is you're trying to delete. Think of it this way, if I could take it one step further. The brain, once it has a big negative emotive memory, or several, but let's just take one. Now I'm in a situation in the future, and I haven't resolved that original. Now I'm in a situation, the brain checks what I call its reference library. When and where have I been in a situation like this before? And it finds that one, because it's got a big, what we call electrical charge or emotion attached to it. So it's in the reference library. So it fires exactly the same response as the original experience. So it may be over-responding to the stimulus now, but it's still responding, and it's going to file that as a memory, that new response. So it's building. Now, and this is oversimplified, but when you get into that with a client or yourself and you tap out that original, then the brain has a memory of that experience without the emotion. That's the new reference. So in the future, your chances of that same, like in similar situation, event, or circumstance, it's probably not going to fire the same panic, because the brain checks that memory and says, oh, we survived that. There's no electrical charge. Mm-hmm. Let's stay cool. And that's how it works in a nutshell.
Okay, Alex, if someone's listening to this and they have the intention to start improving their immune system, and they hear what you're saying and they know that there are certain things that they need to tap, that you need to tap these stresses and these events, how do you figure out, though, exactly where to start and what events are really having the biggest impact on your immune system?
Okay, the first step is awareness. You start to make it, well, first, you make a decision. that's a big, big factor in a human brain, is making a decision, deciding. It changes all kinds of things in the brain, filters and so on. For example, let's suppose you and I were asked a question by a park ranger. Hi, folks. Did you enjoy the walk in the park? Yep. How many quarters did you see in the grass? None. Well, we're doing a special this week. If you want to retrace your route, any quarters you find, we'll pay you $20 per quarter. Now, he's enhanced our chances of finding the quarters. But here's my question. Were the quarters just put there, or were they there all the time we didn't notice? They were there all the time we didn't notice, right?
Right.
Now, we're focused on it because we made a decision to find them and get the $20. So we may not notice the squirrels this time, but we'll notice the quarters. In like and similar way, when you're first introduced to the tapping, you make a decision. I'm going to start paying attention to what gets me uptight, angry, hostile towards others, fearful, rage, short-tempered. You could start with words like, what bugs me? As you do that, begin to pay attention, your brain will start to bring back into your awareness examples of where you've responded that way. If you can get an experience in time, something that occurred that you were part of, and you can release or delete the emotion in that experience, you're at a core issue. That set the stage for future like and similar responses. So just by paying attention and making a decision, you will start to notice your own emotive responses. And so then you just develop a word pattern. Let's say you're angry at this fellow, but actually you've been paying attention. You remember Dad used to ridicule you. Every time you tried something, he ridiculed you. So now you don't want to try anything new because you've got this horrible embarrassment, shame, anger, feelings inside. So you take one at a time, back in that memory, and you go, this anger when Dad used to, and you go through a bunch of them until the brain generalizes out the change, because it generalizes out the negatives. And that's the way people think when they're taking training in tapping. Oh, this is a generalization. That woman burned me. All women are bad. That man was a physical abuser. All men are dangerous. That's a generalization, and it's negative. But it also works positively. The brain doesn't distinguish. So as you start to make changes in your fear memories, at some point, the brain generalizes out and takes all the fear memories and deletes the fear. All it's doing is taking the electrical charge off the experience.
Okay. Alex, if someone's immune system, if they feel it's already been compromised, they currently have the flu or they have some kind of cold or they're just struggling with something, does the approach differ at all when you're actually sick than when you're doing it as a preventative measure?
I would split that into two. If I had a client that walked in and said, look, I've got the flu, and it turns out to be the swine flu. Okay, how are you feeling about getting it? Well, I'm scared. People, you know, I've heard people die. Okay, start with the PR point, which is the karate chop on the side of the hand. Even though I have this fear I'm going to die from the swine flu that I've got, I deeply and completely accept myself. Now, I want to make a proviso there, if I may. People with low self-esteem, very low self-esteem, we've done study after study on this, will not accept a statement like, I deeply and completely accept myself. They consider it fraudulent. It doesn't apply. So you have to be a little artful. All you're trying to do is separate the problem from who they are. In this sense, without getting too deep into it, person walks into the office and says, I'm a manic depressive. That's a label. But he's saying that's who he is. I am a. So we have to separate the two. Take it out of his identity box. And one way to do it is deeply and completely accept myself statement. Another one is, and it's worked quite well, even though I have the flu, and I'm afraid I'm going to die, I'm okay, but the fear sucks.
Okay.
lots of ways to do it.
Right.
Got it separated on the PR point. Usually takes about 3 repeats. Then you have the client or yourself focus on this fear of the swine flu and dying. And that's your reminder phrase as you tap the rest of the buttons.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And what advice do you give to people who have a lot of beliefs around their own immune system? I mean, so often you hear people say, oh, well, I have a weak immune system.
Even though I believe I have a weak immune system, I deeply and completely accept myself. Or even though I have a compromised immune system, I'm okay, but the compromised immune system part sucks.
Okay. I like that.
Or not okay. Whatever fits, you know.
Right.
Whatever the person feels comfortable with.
When someone comes into your office and they have a problem like an autoimmune disease, do you find that there is a consistency with, you know, people that are struggling with that? Is there usually common fears and anxieties that can contribute to that?
Let me put it a different way. Of all the people I've seen, which is a small segment of the world population, but of all the people I've seen where immune system was part of the conversation in therapy, I've yet to meet one where there wasn't angers, long-term, hostilities, rage, short-tempered, opinionated, these kind of things. It's almost like a personality profile, and you got to be gentle with this one when you introduce it to them, usually very low self-image or self-esteem. And the immune system has been tricked. An autoimmune disease means the immune system, well, let's back up. As you were saying when we started, it's programmed to protect self. When we're born, the immune system takes 3 hours, and I like to use ATVs, all-terrain vehicles, very fast. These are the T cells. They go ripping through the system, taking pictures, let's say. After 3 hours, they know the territory. They know what is self, and anything after that is non-self. So they file all that, and you know, in the cell's information. So all that information is filed as to what's out there in the body, and that's self. So when we're born, 50% of the immune system is already pre-programmed by whatever my parents were exposed to, especially mom. The rest, the other 50%, approximately, is going to be trained by what I run into, and it's going to build antibodies for it. So if I run into a cold bug, it's going to build antibodies to fight it, so the next time I won't get the cold. I have to get a different one. So now I've been hostile towards somebody, and I call them whatever, a lot of names over time. Part of me can become separated by being labeled that. In other words, the subconscious mind takes everything we say personally. So if I call somebody else a bad part of the anatomy, actually I'm talking to my own subconscious. So when a client comes in and they have an autoimmune disease and they want to know what they can do with their mind to aid and abet a cure, I want to know what is the disease. Let's say they say arthritis of the hands, which is an autoimmune disease, arthritis. I want to know who they don't want to touch. I want to know who they're trying to push out of their life. I want to know what can they not grasp. And one of those, in similar statements, something's going to light them up and they're going to respond. That's their subconscious telling us we're on the right track. Now we have to resolve that relationship with the other person. A good one is rheumatoid arthritis, muscles. That's connective tissue. So I want to know what the client's connectiveness is to other people. That's sometimes they balk, but after a while they get into it. We resolve the relationship issue, and we find changes in the autoimmune disease. There's one case published, and we have his full permission to do so. He was carried into my office 12 years ago with ALS, a neurological disorder, autoimmune disease. We worked for off and on for 3 months, fairly intensively. About 3/4 of the way through, he was walking into the office on crutches. About the last one or two sessions, he'd walk in with a cane. And then when he realized that he made it, he wasn't going to die. He asked me, how do you cancel a medical pension? Because ALS, when you get it, you get a pension. And I said, well, why don't you leave it for a few years? So he did, and he contacted us again, said, they're still paying me. I've written letters. I don't have ALS anymore. They had nothing in place, oddly enough, to delete that pension, even though he wanted it to. So here we are, roughly 15 years later. He's symptom-free, and he's still getting his pension as if he's good.
That's not a bad deal. I wouldn't complain.
Well, it bothered him on a moral level.
Yeah, of course.
I said to him, look, you've shown me your letters, 36 pages of letter writing in your portfolio, and they haven't said, we're going to cancel. The government wins every time. You might. So anyway, we got him to the place where he accepted it and gives a portion of it away to some society that he approves of. But yeah, so we solved that dilemma. But the point is, the ALS and all its symptomology is gone. That's a pretty bold statement. We didn't set out to cure anybody. You've got to be careful of that. But his body did. It cured itself by resolving all the emotional stuff in his past.
Right. Alex, so many people, when they use tapping, they like to incorporate the positive sayings. Do you do this?
Yes.
And how do you, what sayings do you use, and how, you know, specifically do you use this to help increase someone's immune system or improve their immune system?
Of all the word patterns I've experimented with, I always come back to Pat Carrington's original, I choose. That seems to have the most effect on the most people. So everything we do when we use it in a positive manner is predicated with, I choose. So I choose to get over this immune system problem. I choose to resolve the emotions behind it. I choose whatever direction it goes, I choose is in front of it. And if I could add this, let's say you've got 5 gallons of black paint, and we take a cup of white paint, and we pour it in, and we give it a good mix. The chances are your eye will not discern any difference in the color. In a like and similar way, if there's a powerful or very large negative emotion attached to some event or situation, I highly recommend, in terms of time efficiency, that be reduced considerably first. So use the standard tapping approach to reduce the negative, and then you can switch to the positive, and it will go in. But if you try to put, say, let's use voltage. If you've got 50 volts negative and you put 2 volts positive into the circuit, you've still got 48 to deal with. So I find, and it's only my own experience, reduce the negative charge, if there is one, a big one, first, and then use the tapping in a positive way to enhance things or amplify things or improve them.
Mm-hmm. Great. Alex, you've already mentioned before that the best way to get results is when you're using your own words, like the story that the gentleman who really was saying how he felt. So yeah. I like to do some tapping, and I know that it's not going to be as powerful for people as if they did it for themselves. But is there some generic tapping that we can do just to get people in the momentum?
Yes, all the my answer is, think of something that annoys you. Think of a person that annoys you. Go inside and go, okay, last time I talked to them, they kept interrupting me. They think they're smarter than me. Okay, how do I feel about thinking somebody's smarter than me? I feel uncomfortable. This discomfort would be the word pattern. This discomfort when I think people think they're smarter than me. At the same time, I might notice also that I'm angry about that. Okay, this anger when I think people are smarter than me. And you just keep going to all the, you tap, take a breath, reflect inwards. Notice what else is there. Usually there's 5 or 6 different branches on that tree. Those are called aspects. So if you don't take them all off effectively, the thing can regrow. It's the same as tapping too soon in a therapeutic encounter. Person comes in, you're anxious to show off. They sit down, I'm uncomfortable being here. Whack, 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 whack. If you jump in too soon, you can mellow a person out, and they go, hey, I feel fine, go away. But you haven't gotten anywhere near what might be a core issue. You have no idea. So it's always useful to track them as you're going. Okay, they're a little upset, but is there a deeper issue I could be focused on? And as you ask yourself those kind of questions, you'll start to notice that there is. I had one lady that said, I get really anxious when I go to the mall. I said, okay, you always get anxious every time you go to the mall? No. Okay, what's the difference that makes a difference? I don't know. I said, all right, do you walk to the mall? What? No, I drive. Okay, so when you drive to the mall, has there been a time where you get anxious and a time where you drove to the mall and you didn't? Yes. What was the difference? Well, I had a friend with me. Hold it. When you drive alone, you get anxious. And when you drive with a friend, you don't. That's it. Okay, even though when I drive to the mall alone, or anywhere else for that matter, I get anxious, I deeply and completely accept myself. We tracked it back after we tapped on that and focused on it. She suddenly had an insight how her father taught her to drive. It was an experience. So by herself, she'd worked a way to constantly tell herself all the things she was doing wrong. And when she had somebody else in the car, she didn't. Well, she got anxious when she was alone and didn't when she was with somebody else. That's sort of a core issue when we got to the father. So we tapped out 5 or 6 memories of Dad's driving lessons. When we were done, she realized he wasn't that good a driver to begin with. It's funny, you know, when we go back and we resolve these things in the past instead of just pretending we aren't there, how we can extract the learning when we've resolved it. We suddenly realize something else, perhaps, that right. We didn't, as long as we're in the negative emotion.
Right. So focusing again on just the immune system and tapping, for many people, the concept of being able to work on something emotional and your body having a physical response in the moment where, you know, your arthritis goes away, that seems like a very big leap. Do you find, what advice do you have when you know, someone's having trouble believing it? And then my follow-up question for that is, what can people expect? Do you tap and suddenly, you know, you feel better in your body right away? Or is it a process? What do you find?
Well, belief is pretty powerful. So let me address that as a question unto itself and give you a name for your listeners. Dr. Robert Ader, A-D-E-R. They can look him up. Dr. Ader is a clinical psychologist that has studied the immune system. He tests the toxicity of cancer drugs and so on. And if you fast forward through all his research, but they can look it up and get it, he proved the immune system is trainable. So we start with that for those that have a belief. So the immune system was originally set up to protect self. Now it's attacking self. Well, right there, it's been reprogrammed. Dr. Feldman proved or discovered the immune system has nerve cells and memory. So when we now know that the immune system has a memory, just like the brain, and it was set up originally to protect self, and now it's attacking self, it learned to do that. The fact it learned means it's trainable. So it's not a such a big leap now to train it again not to attack self. Mm-hmm. Right? And, I mean, yeah, if it's trainable to go negative, why isn't it trainable to go positive? Of course it is.
Right.
Many schools, medical schools, and some still do, did teach the immune system was autonomous. That is, it operated independent of conscious thought. We have now proven that totally false. It goes up with positive emotions. It goes down with negative ones.
Mm-hmm. With that, if that's true, how quickly do you see results once you tap away on the beliefs and the fears that are holding you back? I mean, how long does it take for you to see your actual immune system and your body responding?
In some cases, 6-8 sessions. You have to gather the information, get the emotion, delete it. And if they have a lot of negative history, that takes time. In other cases, the shortest I've seen was 2 sessions, where we actually had measurable changes in the symptomology and the amount of drugs they were taking to stop the immune system attacking self. They're on some very powerful, toxic drugs. And the reduction was so much that the medical doctor involved phoned me, introduced himself, and asked what I was doing. And I said, well, we're tapping certain acupuncture points and retraining the immune system. There was dead silence on the phone. And he said, well, no offense, but I'm sorry I asked. Obviously, he'd never heard of the tapping. So I gave him some references where he could go read up on some of the studies done on the tapping and told him, if it interests you, get back, we'll have coffee and I'll explain more in a language he can understand. Like, I'll talk about the T-cells in the immune system and how they're trained and how an emotion chemically changes the cells so the T4 cells become inactive and therefore they're not running around killing things. They're the killer cells. They go out and mark non-self, and then they destroy it. Well, we've now got research that shows the immune system is dormant. It's just sitting there. And when you remove the emotions, a whole bunch of chemical changes take place. The nervous system switches from a sympathetic fight or flight to parasympathetic, relaxed. The immune system gets boost, and now it's starting to retrain itself. Mm-hmm. And build more soldiers that are active, or killer cells. The whole key is to think in terms of, I had an experience, I've got a story, and I've got an emotional response sometimes. Name it. Delete it. It doesn't matter if it's attached to fireplaces because you burned your finger when you were a kid. It doesn't matter if it's attached to success because people laughed at you when you tried. It doesn't matter if that pretty girl in the class in grade 7, you kissed for her birthday, slapped you, and all the guys laughed their heads off at you. Now you're embarrassed. And so you get the emotion, word it, tap it, and you're going to affect the immune system. You don't need to know which one specifically. Just make a decision to delete the stress type of experiences. More specifically, take out the negative emotion from those experiences. That's the stressor, is the emotion.
Alex, what would you say to someone that says, but I have so many of those events, I have no idea where to start?
Great. Then, since you have so many to start, just pick one, and there'll be one less, is what I tell them. I also tell them, think of the personality as a circle. You can enter at any point, and you're in. Whatever you delete, that change is going to permeate through the rest of the structure in some way. And the next time you see the person or working on yourself, you're going to enter from a different point of view, a different story, and delete something else. Well, if we're made up, if we're made up of all our experiences, both positive and negative, if all we did was reduce the negatives stored in our memory banks, in our brain, then by that alone, we're going to end up more positive because you've changed the ratio, which will affect thinking, behaviors, perceptions, and so on. Think of it this way. Somebody says something at a party. Somebody else listens to the whatever they said and gets angry. Watch the behavior based on the anger. Somebody else heard the same words, that is, they were exposed to the same stimulus, and they thought it was funny. Look at their behavior. So we have 2 different behaviors from the same stimulus, and both are emotions expressing themselves, driving behaviors. So if you reduce the negatives, you're less inclined to perceive whatever that person said as negative. because you're not as negative as you were before you started the tapping.
Mm-hmm.
It's, to me, it's a negative emotion eraser.
Right. Alex, do you have any of your own personal experience of using this to improve your immune system and the difference that you saw?
Well, of all the research I've done, the immune system seems to have something to do with cancer. It's a long, you know, we'd need 3 hours to explore it fully. I was diagnosed with leukemia about 12 years ago. I have had no chemo, no radiation, and just to annoy my oncologist, I say to him, oh yeah, we might drop in at McDonald's on the way home and get something to eat. Really upsets him. Not nice of me, but I like doing it. Point is, I'm still here, long past the due date. I still see 5 people a day, and I've had no radiation, no chemotherapy with leukemia. How's that? That help?
Yeah, that's a pretty good example.
It's one of those.
I won't lie, I'm impressed. So then, tell me about that experience, though, then, Alex. When you were first diagnosed, how did you have to begin incorporating tapping right away? I mean, where did you even start when you get such a big diagnosis like that?
Well, when he told me, when the oncologist I was sent to told me, you know, the words are written indelibly in your mind. I'm afraid to say, I don't know why he was afraid to say it, but those are the words he used. I'm afraid to say you have leukemia. And my head or my mind seemed to leave my body, and it was like I was up in the air staring down on the office. He said a few other things that I don't recall before I sort of reassociated. And I drove home in a daze, and I said to my wife, sit down, and she said, oh, no, because she knew I'd gone to see a specialist, but I hadn't told her what. She had just cut to the chase, and I said, I have leukemia. So she cried. I drank a glass of wine. Good therapy, by the way. And then I said, okay, I'm going to start working on this, you know. So I started with guided imagery. And then I switched to self-hypnosis, and then I combined them. I used timeline therapy. I used a lot of tools in my toolbox, and it was around that time I heard about the tapping business. So off I went, learned it, and found that it saved me a lot of time. I devote X amount of time per week to working on controlling the cancer. And the tapping is now a very large part of that because it's so what I call efficient. And what I do is just use simple words now, like this cancer leaving my body. I choose to let the cancer leave my body. I choose to let the immune system repair. I choose to let the immune system aid and abet removing the cancerous cells. It knows how to do that. I choose to support it. Whatever comes to mind, you know, it changes by the day. And I don't dwell on it too much because from my reading and research, if you focus on what's wrong too long, you're aiding and abetting what's wrong. You're focused on it. You're attracting it. You know, that's all you're thinking about. So I devote X time to the cancer, but I also sometimes have to start around with, even though on the karate job, even though cancer is really no big deal, and sometimes I get overexcited about it, it really isn't that big a thing. I'm okay and the cancer sucks. And then I go around, this cancer, this cancer, this cancer. I don't want it to be a big deal in my mind because the bigger it is, the better its chance of manifesting itself, and I'd like it to go.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't gotten rid of it, but the count was 19.9, which is an elevated white blood count showing an infection because 12.5 is about average. So mine was 12.9 when it was detected. And he said, based on our experiences, in 6 months, 8 months, somewhere in there, you probably hit 65,000. And we're really going to have to start looking at chemo, radiation, and bone marrow transplant after, if we can get a match. So I started with 19.9. Even though I've got a 19.9, I deeply, completely accept myself. That's 19.9, 19.9, 19.9. Meanwhile, I'm sort of running guided imagery images of trucks coming along and digging up all these cells and removing them, and another truck coming in and replacing them with good cells that function, and so on and so forth. About 6 months ago, I had another blood test, and the count was 19.8. So it's down 100 over 12, 13 years. It's almost 13 years now. So it's still there, but it's not doing anything.
Right. And not even, it's not only amazing how your body is responding to the tapping, but it's also amazing the way that you're emotionally responding to it and the way that you're living your life and not letting it be debilitating, which is just...
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Don't let it take over your thinking or your life. You know, we still take the dog for a walk every day. If it rains, we wear a poncho. But, oh no, it's raining, we can't leave, let's stay in and watch television. Forget it. You've got to move. And, you know, with a broken back, which is another story, I can't climb mountains anymore, but I can walk the dog for an hour every day, and that's what we do, rain or shine or snow or whatever. We walk the dog every day, we eat reasonably good foods, and I do a little bit of tapping here and there when I just feel it coming, you know, feeling a nervousness or an upsetness or a preoccupation, starting to realize I'm preoccupied with the cancer. Whoop. This preoccupation with the cancer, because I don't want OCD on it.
right. And Alex, your throat also comes from a previous accident, is that right?
Yes, the truth of that one is I smashed a racing car up at over 100 miles an hour and was diagnosed paraplegic, got out of the chair, which sounds like another story, but the medical records are there. So I beat the paraplegia, but one of the downsides is the throat. The muscles and the nerves in the throat and the neck are damaged. And the last time we checked with a retired neurosurgeon friend of mine, because he's retired, so he's not selling operations, no offense, I said to him, Bob, what do you think? We've come a long way now with our technology. Do you think I should accept the operation? He said, how big is 2 millimeters? And I said, hell, pretty small. He said, okay, that's the distance between the scalpel and your carotid artery. They have to go in from the front to do the operation. Then they're going to put a wedge between the vertebrae and take the pressure off the nerve. And it's what happens if they nick the carotid arteries. You've got about 3 minutes. You'll be spurting 5-10 feet of blood. So they'll want some of your blood on hand to put it back in, and they'll have to cauterize it. And by the time he finished that, I said, so you're saying stay with the growly throat? He said, no, I would. So I have.
And the amazing thing about it, Alex, is you never let it stop you. Every time I've interviewed you, you never canceled, but you've you know, gone with it and you've done it. And it's really, really admirable.
You have to make those decisions. And the universe is fine out of the way. If a person decides, this is too big for me, I can't do it, the universe will accept that. If you say, well, I'm going to give it a try, it's going to respond. If you say, I'm going to work on it, the universe will accept that too. It really is humbling to realize the universe will accept anything. It'll accept your defeat, your failure, or your success equally. It's up to you.
Wonderful. Well, Alex, thank you so much for sharing all your wisdom, your words, and as well as your action and the way that you share your experiences with us has really been very inspiring.
Oh, okay. I've got, you know, another 2 hours of information on the immune system. I could show how it... here's a quick one.
Sure.
4 method actors were hired to act as if they're very good friends. They split a pizza between them. The cheeses, the 4 cheeses on each piece was measured right down to the gram. They ate the pizza in a very friendly environment. A blood test was taken prior. A blood test was taken after they digested. We saw on the film the lipids in the blood, in the vial where the blood was, and the voiceover is explaining, look at all the cholesterol that's just been created by eating that pizza. I'd forgotten the time, but sometime later, it was gone. So something in the blood broke it down substantially. That doesn't mean you can eat pizza every day and get away with it. But on this one experiment, the blood did break down the lipids in the blood. Now, the same four were this time asked to access hostility towards each other. So they made up stories about each other and so on. One said, "You just won the state championship with your dog. You're walking home with the dog on a leash and holding the trophy, and a drunk teenager comes around the corner on two wheels and smashes your dog to bits. There it is on the end of the leash, dead. You're about to have lunch with that guy."
Wow.
Yeah, these guys don't play fair. So now the four of them are sitting there, and they're absolutely hostile. Fast forward through the whole thing. The cholesterol stayed in the blood. They looked at the quality of the saliva. It was down. They looked at how the gastrointestinal was pumping the stuff through. That was all out of whack. Not to bore you with all the details, but it was amazing how the emotions affected how that food was being processed by the body. So emotions and the tapping, you're going to have less heart attacks, heart arrhythmias, Crohn's disease, all those things are going to go down, if not disappear, if you do enough negative emotion removal from the system. And the immune system is in there every time. It's got a memory. It's trainable. Do you want it to work for you or again you?
I'm with it working for me.
Right. The simple rule is make a decision, focus on those uncomfortable memories, delete them from your memory bank. Your immune system is going to thank you.
Wonderful. Well, I think we're all here after listening to this call, we're going to really actually make that conscious decision to make it work for us.
And anybody needs the science, I've got tons of research to back up what we've been talking about. So, you know, it's not just sales pitch, it's empirical science.
Wonderful. Well, Alex, once again, thank you so much for sharing all this wisdom and just for being such an inspiration. It's always a pleasure to interview you.
My pleasure as well.